This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. A year of Turner has begun. We're here at the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C., at the J.M.W. Turner exhibit specifically, and right now we're just surrounded by landscapes and seascapes, conflagrations, all bristling with light, spray, storms, and the fires of dusk and dawn. Joseph Mallard William Turner lived from 1775 to 1851. He was the youngest person ever inducted into the Royal Academy. Over the course of his artistic lifetime, he painted hundreds of oils and thousands of watercolors, and is generally regarded as having transformed the way people paint and see landscapes. Franklin Kelly is the curator of the Turner exhibition and joins us here. Thanks very much for the invitation.
Well, pleasure. It's always nice to be in the exhibition for any reason.
This was not easy to put together. Give us some idea.
This was not. Because of the eventual disposition of Turner's bequest to the nation after his death in 1851, the large majority of his works do remain in Britain, and the large majority of those remain at the Tate Britain. And back in the 1980s, they built a wing to display their wonderful Turner treasures. And you can understand how when we first approached them in the early 90s, saying we'd like to empty their wing of Turners, how that was not exactly...
This is a little bit as if the Tate had said to someone in America, send... send the Lincoln Memorial over to us.
Yes, maybe a little bit easier logistically, but symbolically and emotionally. And they said, well, let's work on this over time and think, you know, how to do it. And indeed, the time came in the late 1990s where the Tate began to think in terms of its part of its mission, really, to spread Turner's reputation internationally, and agreed if we were still interested that we could organize an exhibition for America that would be the greatest Turner retrospective that had ever been accomplished.
What did he see in landscapes and seascapes, and how did he render it in a way that was different?
Well, he saw many things. He was a very powerful observer of nature, and indeed his great critic, John Ruskin, said that no matter how fantastic his pictures ended up looking, that truth was beneath them all, and that there was a fundamental responsibility to depict nature in all of its guises. That said, he loved the exceptional. He loved the exceptional moments of weather, of storm, of sunset, of just extraordinary coloristic possibilities. But he also saw and found meaning in ways that are just so, again, varied and so richly creative. He did pictures that illustrate scenes from ancient history, from mythology, from literature, from contemporary events, from his own imagination. And one of the things that he was crucial in helping to do was to elevate landscape out of more than just being about nature, that it could be about grand ideas the way what was called history painting could be.
Turner is regarded as, beyond dispute, such a master. Help us understand the ways in which, for his time, he was considered cranky, contrary, and revolutionary.
There are many such ways. We can start with who he was personally. By birth, he was son of a London barber, grew up in Covent Garden, solidly middle class. By all accounts, never lost his Cockney accent. He was asked late in life how he'd accomplished everything he did, and he said, damn hard work. And he did, as you said, created just amazing numbers of things. He marketed himself very well as a businessman, had prints made after his works of art. And in person, he was a surprise to people. He was given to kind of muttering. He was short, always wore shabby clothes, and a remarkable contrast to these lyrical, beautiful paintings. Many people who encountered him, who knew his art, thought they were going to see someone like Beethoven or Chopin, you know, this sort of wild-haired romantic genius, and this little man who seemed to be nothing at all like what he did.
I want to ask you about some, I confess, some of my favorites.
Sure.
Battle of Trafalgar.
Painted it a couple of times. You may be thinking, are you thinking of the very large Battle
I'm
of Trafalgar?
I'm thinking of the very large one. In fact, we're sitting, it's several rooms down and we can see it.
Yes, it is the largest painting of Turner's career.
And in this case, the size of a good billboard.
It is.
Yeah.
And by the time Turner was working in the early 1820s, Trafalgar was recent history. It happened in 1805, and so he was able to talk with people who'd been there, interview sailors, try to get everything right. And he put a tremendous amount of effort into, not physical, just physical, but also intellectual, to try to make this thing a fitting testament to that great victory where Horatio Nelson led the British fleet against the French and Spanish fleets and defeated them. It was one of the turning points of the war. Painting was not entirely well received. He did some things that bothered people who were maybe perhaps literal. He combined moments from different times in the battle. Mm-hmm. The other thing about the painting that's very interesting and was troublesome for some observers is in the foreground we see a scene of sailors, English, Spanish, French. They're all in this huge mix together, fighting to save themselves, slipping below the waves. The waves are running blood red, and it's difficult. And for many of Turner's contemporaries, seeing that human cost of war in what was a celebratory image was a kind of unhappy chastening of it, and that it maybe meant not sufficiently patriotic.
Nobody before had, I gather, been able to mix, do I say, pigments and hues that wound up having the kind of sheen that
is. Well, I mean, Turner was really the more the actual way he painted, and there were accounts of him on what were called varnishing days at public exhibitions.
This is when the artists were, they hung their works and they were allowed to give
exhibitions
one last little look at them.
In 19th century Britain, or it would be true here in this country or in Paris or whatever, they didn't look the way this one around us does with the paintings all lined nicely up, orderly. They were hung often in one large or a series of very large rooms, and they were hung floor to ceiling. And space was competed for. And the artists would complain sometimes because they didn't get to choose where their picture went. They complained that sometimes the light didn't favor their work, or the picture next to it might have too much red in it, and they needed to. And so these days were instituted before the show opened to the public, called varnishing days. And the idea was some final adjustments. And Turner became this infamous for sending in a picture that might have been in an incomplete state, and then go on varnishing day and work away while people, sort of other artists, were looking baffled. And then he'd walk away and there'd be this transformed painting. There was an account once where John Constable had a painting hung next to one of Turner's, and Constable's painting had a lot of red in it. It was a Turner seascape, like sort of green and, you know, blue. And Turner looked at Constable's painting with all that red, went over to his and painted in a red buoy down in the corner, and then left. And Constable came in and said, "Turner has been here and fired a gun," because he said, you know, with that one bright red buoy down in the midst of all that green and blue water, he'd taken the thunder and the visual, you know, focus right away.
I want to get you to talk about what I'm told is just about your favorite. Is this Ulysses?
Ulysses deriding Polyphemus, yes.
Okay.
The story comes from Homer's Odyssey. It's about Ulysses and his men after the Trojan War, their 10 years of wandering, their adventures. And this particular episode comes when they just after they've been captured by the one-eyed giant, Polyphemus, the Cyclops, who proceeded to eat one of them every day and was going to continue doing so, but Ulysses managed to blind him and then make good their escape. And you see in the painting that moment, there's the great Greek vessels are sailing out into this resplendent dawn. The sky is lit up with these rays of orange and yellow light with the rising sun. And I love the way, the imaginary and the real blend in this picture. Up in the mountain, you can see the shadowy form of the giant, of Polyphemus, almost like he's part of that mountain. Or in front of Ulysses' boat, there are waves being pushed up by the bow. But when you look at those waves, you see there are all these imaginary creatures, sea nymphs and sprites. Or looking at the sun as it clears the horizon, you can just make out the shapes of horses rearing, as if the horses of Apollo's chariot are literally there, and yet not literally there. It's a kind of a netherworld between the real and the imaginary. And I think it's just pulled off with extraordinary brilliance. I really do.
Mr. Kelly, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Franklin Kelly is the curator of the J.M.W. Turner exhibit at the National Gallery of Art, where it will remain until January 6. The exhibit then goes to the Dallas Museum of Art, followed by the Met in New York. You can see a slideshow of J.M.W. Turner's art, including his paintings of the Battle of Trafalgar, at npr.org.